I'm Jeff Sickinga, Executive Director of the Ashbrook Center, and this is The American Idea, where we discuss the ideas, people, and events that have made America what it is today. We believe that by understanding our history and our principles, we can better live up to the promise of the American founding and preserve our ongoing experiment in self-government. Welcome to The American Idea. I want to welcome you to this episode of The American Idea, Ashbrook's podcast. We're here, of course, with Coach Lee Owens and Coach Jim Tressel, two legends of college coaching, talking about lessons in leadership. You were talking earlier at the Ashbrook gathering with the students about some of the most important qualities of a leader. For our listeners, if you had to say the most important, I know there's a lot of important ones, but if you had to say the most important quality for a leader, what is it?
You know, and I'll go quick because Coach has got great insights on this. You know, you can talk about trust and integrity. You've got to be able to have that. You get to talk about courage. Without a doubt, it's important, or being a good communicator. But as I said earlier, I really think number one is competence. I think it starts with that because of the credibility it gives you to lead and because of the confidence you gain as a person with competence in terms of what you do. So I think initially that would be, and I know there was a study done and a survey taken by several leaders in the corporate world and the sport world, and most of the highest percentage, the highest characteristic listed was competence. And so, you know, there's kind of some agreement on that thought.
You know, we get asked those kinds of questions often about, well, what is the single most? Who was the best player you ever coached? Yeah. Or who was the, well, you know.
So maybe it's not a fair question. Yeah.
It isn't a fair question, but sometimes you have to answer questions. And so having had that question asked many times, I have come to the conclusion that the single most important trait is selflessness. And the reason I say that is I started thinking about the multitude of traits you have to have. You know, Lee just talked about trust, integrity, competence, this, that. And I thought, you know, I looked at the guys that got closer to reaching their potential individually, or those groups of people that collectively somehow, you know, reached their potential or did more than anyone ever dreamed they would do. And I found that the common denominator was selflessness. And I'd been around some hardworking people with great integrity, but sometimes they let their own self-interest get involved in that hard work and that, you know, or that person who was highly skilled and they could do the job and they were smarter than a whip and had great cognitive ability and great ability to make decisions. But they let that selfishness creep in. Think about our society. We have lots of competence. If you took away a little competence, we'd still be pretty good. Mm-hmm. We have lots of selfishness. Just think if we eliminated all selfishness. Think about anything bad that happens. Name it. A murder, sexual assault, a horrible word, bullying on the cell phone. Mm-hmm. You name anything that's not good. And my belief is that you can trace it to selfishness. Just think if we, and here's the hard part. You can work as hard as you want and only get to a certain competence. It's hard to get to a certain level of selflessness too.
True.
Because we're human.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean,
that's true.
We're human. We want what we want. We think we worked hard to deserve or whatever. We might have a different vantage point. Still, the harder I saw our teams work on selflessness, I mean, I hated to admit it this year in college football, and I happen to say it to Ryan as well. The two teams that looked to me like they had the best culture, best selflessness, best camaraderie were Michigan and Washington.
Yeah, I agree.
They just had that something, and I'm not saying Ohio State's wasn't good or Alabama's wasn't good, but you could just see a certain glow about them.
I agree.
That it, you know, that J.J. McCarthy didn't care how many yards he had. He didn't care if he was in the Heisman Trophy, right?
Right, exactly.
Now, that's hard to develop. It's just like it's hard for the human to be selfless, right? I mean, it just... But so when I'm asked that question, I've come to the conclusion that just you know, it may be the hardest thing to get good at, but it's the most important thing to get good at.
I was at a coaching convention, an AFCA convention earlier in my career, and I heard Zig Ziglar speak to the group, and it was about, and the comment was on the line of, you can lead anyone anywhere, get anyone to do anything, if you give them what they need, if you serve them, if you meet their needs, you can take them there, which leads to your point. Yeah. It has to be about them. And
his famous line, Zig Ziglar, was, you'll get everything in life you want as soon as you help enough other people get what they want.
Get what they want. That's probably a better way to put it.
But, you know, think about that. So often it's like, hey, look, I'm going to go get paid, or I'm going to go get what I want. But you know what? You'll end up with everything you want in life if you help enough others get what they want. Now, that's hard, though. I mean, but nothing good is easy.
Let's talk about your personal experiences in leadership, and particularly in football coaching. You've obviously had a lot of wins, both of you. You've had some losses and had some hard times, too. What's been the toughest moment for you each as coaches? Whether it's been on the field or off the field, what's been that hardest moment?
Well, I shared with the group today, as you know, Jeff, it's, you know, most of us coaches, two types of coaches, been fired, going to get fired. But it's never easy. You know, failure's tough, and particularly when you haven't failed up to that point. And it kind of hits you in the nose, and you realize, you know, I've just lost my job. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't handle very well. I was bitter. I was selfish. I took that into a team meeting, and I just had a person I respected, our team chaplain, Newt Larson, go in the meeting with us. He just happened to be there by God's grace, and he had enough confidence in himself and in our relationship to pull me aside and say, Coach, that wasn't good. You know, you can't be bitter. You've got to get better. You've got to get over it. You've got to move forward. You've got to let go of it. Mm-hmm. It's what's going to happen next. And that's the decision you've got to make, and I'm counting on you to make the right decision. 5 days later, I was the head football coach at Ashland University. So that's my story. That's probably the low point, and what it ended up bringing me to a place where it's obviously been the best part of my career is being the coach at Ashland. Mm-hmm.
So the reality is it might be your high point.
It might have been my high point, yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, think about
right.
that. Yeah, think about that.
Right.
Exactly.
You, at the moment, you might have thought it was your low point, but then when you handled it properly, or you stopped making your own plans and you let God's plans take over, it might have been your high point.
McGraw's got a country song, you know, if you want to hear God laugh, just tell him your plans, right?
Yeah.
And you're right. You know, I was feeling sorry for myself. How could they fire me? Man, we just won 7 games. I mean, listen, that's not what it's all about. No. It's not about you. And life's not fair. Mm. So.
Well, and how often we see that in our students, sometimes in our own children, is until there's something that really is disappointing, that's can teach a lesson that maybe you hadn't learned yet, that shake you in your boots a little. I found that with teams. I mean, I can go back to losses we had that fueled unbelievable victories down the road. I can't go back to any victories that fueled victories, because we used to read a book every year, and one of the favorite books we studied as a team was a book called If It Ain't Broke,
Don't Fix It.
Break It.
Break It, because you don't want to do it like last year all the time.
Right.
We'll do it better.
Because everyone's telling you, oh man, you guys were great. You were champions. You just keep doing what you're doing. That's the kiss of death. And the book is about American companies who tried to keep doing things the way they were doing, and they got overtaken. Yeah. You know, whether it's GM and Ford, Toyota, but they decide, you know what, we're going to have more quality assurances, blah, 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 blah. Now, a lot of times, if you don't have someone break you, you're going to have the wherewithal to break it and say, you know what, okay, this moment's a new moment. How can we do it better?
Yeah.
And to me, that was the fun of coaching, was no two seasons were the same.
Right.
I mean, it didn't matter. Everyone said, oh, man, you're national champions. Everything was wonderful. No, it wasn't. Because we woke up the next day and we went recruiting because we knew the next year was a new year and no one really cared about last year. Or if it was the other way. You lost a couple games, okay, horrible, that's fine. We went to work and we learned from it, easier to learn from the tough times.
Yeah.
More, just like selfishness is natural, learning from hard times is natural. Learning from good times takes a special ability to, that's why
sustainability is so tough.
Oh.
Harder to stay there than to get there.
I mean, Kansas City Chiefs are getting ready to try to go 3 in a row, and no one's done 3 in a row since ever, or what?
I don't think ever.
Ever.
No, not 3 Super Bowls.
So it tells you how hard it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's never been done. And that's just 3 in a row. You know, so I would say mine was when I was forced to leave Ohio State, I thought the world had ended, a little bit like Lee's talking about. I didn't think it was fair and, you know, so forth and so on. But fortunately, quickly, through my mentor and through a lot of prayer and whatnot, I came to the conclusion that, you know what, it won't do anyone any good if I have this attitude. It's not going to help Ohio State. I'm not mad at Ohio State. I might be mad at a couple people at Ohio State, but it's not Ohio State I'm mad at. It's not going to help those kids I recruited there. It's not going to help my family. It's not. So same. I've got to decide, you know, to where can I improve and what's next? And then I have to believe that whatever's next can be impactful, can serve the needs of maybe a different group.
You mentioned, we were talked about before when we were talking with the group, about the importance of the sense of mission and purpose, and reiterating that all the time, making that a living, breathing part of your culture. You also talked about, both of you talked about, the importance of having great people with you, great staff, recruiting great kids, mentoring them, retaining them. And look, this is a challenge for every organization. Finding great people who believe in the mission with you, getting them there and keeping them there. How do you do that as a leader?
Yeah, we called it recruit, develop, and retain the right people. The right people, that was the part of it.
Okay.
That was always our mission statement.
Talk about the right people.
I think if you're good at leading, you're good at identifying leaders and recruiting leaders, and I think that's part of it. In other words, I don't think, if you're talking about the question is, you know, how do we retain? I'm not sure there's real leadership answer for that. Maybe you can help me, Coach. I'm not sure I've got the answer.
There has to be certain things that you're competent at, which is you better be in the ballpark from a compensation standpoint, because I don't care what else you do.
Right. Sure.
You know, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, and that's what makes today's environment in college athletics. You know, it used to be every kid you were recruiting had the same compensation, scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, so, I mean, I get it. I mean, I was just talking to P.J. Fleck, the head coach at Minnesota, and he lost one of his best players. Minnesota has the lowest amount of money to give for their NIL, and it's, I forget the number, but most of the other people in the Big Ten have more than 10 times as much as him. And he lost a player who was offered $250,000, and he was able to have the kid be able to earn like $40,000. Mm-hmm. Of course he's going to tell him, look, and he knew the background of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to say, you know what, Johnny, you probably got to go. Mm-hmm. Now, knowing he lost one of his best, lost 10 starters last year.
Wow.
You know, so retention, you got to get on at least a little bit of a fairly level playing field. Or retention is business.
It won't happen to me.
Right?
It will not happen.
No. Now, how do you keep an Ohio State assistant coach from going to another big-time program, or a Cleveland Browns assistant coach from going to another big? I think one thing that is the biggest desire of people is responsibility. So if you give them like a coordinator job, or, you know, you give them a little bit more responsibility, so that they can grow, and in their minds, it moves them closer to their goals, which might be a head coach someday. So I think retention can happen with finding out what responsibility growth a person's interested in. So I'm at a company, and finding out from that person who works there, what do you aspire to do?
Mm-hmm.
So let's start getting you ready to do that, and let me see if we can train you to take those steps. Usually with those steps, we'll go compensation increases, but responsibility increases will be key. The other thing that I used to talk a lot to our young coaches about all the time. You know, we would do a lot of goal setting with our coaches, and okay, you want to be that? Let's. Here's the plan. Here's what you're going to have to do. You better start reading this. You better start studying that. But I used to, at the end, say, it's not where you coach that's going to make you happy. It's with whom. I've seen people go to these wonderful sounding places and not be happy with who they're coaching with, or maybe who they are coaching. And so that's got to be part of the formula too. And so retention can really happen if the person loves where they're working. Now, you got to compensate them. I mean, you can't just do it on, hey, I enjoy it. But if you have your, they see you're doing the best you can do, and it's a wonderful work environment, and they see the opportunity for growth. You know, most of the guys I hired over the years, I had worked with in some way, shape, or form, and you know, they were able to grow. And so those are the kinds of things that it doesn't mean you're going to be able to keep everybody, but gives you a better chance to have some sort of sustainability of staff.
And I might be naive. I'm sure I'm naive. And I might be old school. I'm sure I'm old school. But there was one statement I'd make to the new players or at the team meeting or to a new coach, and it was a simple question. The number one thing you can expect from me is respect. Okay, old school. Mm. But the number one thing I expect from you is loyalty. Loyal to me and loyalty to the program. Now, loyalty would go a long way in terms of retention. I understand that. And it's hard to find, and it's hard to recruit. But to me, that was something that I think every coach and every player in our program needed to hear.
Both of you said something really interesting earlier when we were talking with the students and with the folks. And because I think a lot of people think of football coaches and college presidents as they do a lot of talking. They talk a lot. They do a lot of shouting. That's a lot of words come out of the coach's mouth to people. Both of you said something that really struck me, which is, actually, it's really, really, really important to listen. Can you talk about the place and importance of listening in leadership?
You do a lot more listening than you do talking when you're a coach.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to really find out what's going on. I suppose the same thing as in parenting. I mean, you can lecture your kids all you want, but if you don't know what they're thinking, you don't even know which lecture is the lecture that's needed, right?
And there's a difference between when coaches talk about real listening and just, and in really being there. You know, I can remember working for an athletic director who was as I was talking to him, he was telling text messaging at the same time.
Right.
You know, that's such a bad, or a player has enough courage to come in and sit down and talk to you, and you're taking phone calls, and you're doing this, and you're doing that.
Right.
You know, I'm talking about really engaged, listening, intentional. And that's where most coaches, with our personalities, that's where we are not very good. And then we're, if you don't listen well, how can you be empathetic? And how can you build relationships? And those are two very important things in leadership.
And you know, we err because we're so busy. And I think of errors I've made with not helping a kid develop or not knowing something was going on or whatever. Inevitably, it was because I was trying to do too many things and I have the same amount of time as anyone else. I didn't take the time to listen and know what was going on in that kid's heart, mind, actions, whatever. And that's the bad news, and it gets worse. Now I'm retired. I feel like I have less time because everyone that I talk to say, hey, coach, you know, since you're not working, let's work on this project. You know? And I have found that I'm even more spread out. And I know full well that if I don't have time to think and listen, I'm no good to anybody. You know, but so it's an ongoing battle.
Take it a step further. Coach can attest to this. Not only do we have a poor ability to listen, how about the young people we're working with today and their communication skills? Because the technology and the phone that they have, they're very, very few interpersonal relationships and communication going on in their life. And so for us as coaches, hey, put down your phone, get your eyes up here, pay attention to what we're saying. I mean, that was more and more difficult as my career went along, because they're not used to personally communicating one-on-one. Mm-hmm. For them to show emotion is they put an emoji at the end of a statement on a text message. That's not emotion, but that's what in the mind of the young people today we're dealing with.
And you know, it happened fast.
It's like that.
I remember in 2009, I was talking to the kids going into preseason, and I always wanted to know where they thought we should go, what they thought we should do. Really wasn't important what I thought, because if I thought it and they didn't, they weren't going to do it anyway. So everything we did, they designed what we did. I don't care if we were going to a bowl game, they set the curfews. I don't care if it's, you know, in the weight room, we had a strength and conditioning committee. You know, because, you know, they're all experts. They look on YouTube, we should lunge more. No, we should power clean. You guys decide. And so, you know, as we worked with them to try to you know, listen closely to them, in 2009, they said, you know, Coach, these young kids coming in with their cell phones, they're sitting here in preseason camp and they're on the phone all night with their girlfriend. Because in the old days, you had to go down the hall and get on the payphone, right?
Yeah, right.
And you didn't have all those quarters. Coach, you got to get these young guys, you know, I mean, they don't understand Buckeye football, you know, and this and that, how much rest we got to get. And I'm listening to him whine to his girlfriend, I'm not getting my rest. And I said, well, what's the solution? They said, you know what? We should, for preseason camp, take the cell phones away. I said, take the cell phones away. I said, this is 09 now. I said, people seem to really be liking their cell phones. That's kind of a big deal. I said, I got a cell phone, you know. And they said, no, Coach, I'm telling you, it'll make a difference on our team. Because then you might talk to your roommate. Then you might get a little bit more sleep, you know, whatever, whatever. So I said, well, let me talk about it with the staff. So I went in with the staff. I said, hey, the guys think that, you know, we should consider this. And they brought up some good points. Well, you know how the moms and dads are these days. Well, Johnny didn't have their phone, and there's an emergency. How am I going to get a hold of them? And so we came to the conclusion that we were going to take their phones for a week. We bought these power cords in each assistant coach's office. He had his position players. The kids plugged them in on Sunday night before we went to bed, and we gave them the thing where at the lunchtime you could go to your position coach's office and check to see if there were any emergencies, but you couldn't take the phone. And any amount of time you spend in there takes away from your rest time, and that rest time was sacred, right?
It's big time again.
Big time,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we get to the 3-day point and they're belly aching a little bit. I say, hey, look, man, this was not my, I did not come up with this. I would have never thought of this. Talk to your guys. Well, now we get to Saturday and we're handing the phones back. And so I'm asking the guys, what'd you think? You know what, Coach? That was the best thing. I didn't have to call my mother every day. I didn't have to talk to my girlfriend all the time. No one was bugging me about tickets for the opening game. Coach, that was the best. I said, well, that's good to know. So we went on and had preseason and whatever. Fast forward to the next year. Springtime, I'm talking to the older guys. You know, I say, you said preseason. How do we get better? You know, what do you think we should change? I'm all ears. Tell me why. So da-da-da-da-da-da. So I'm looking at my notes from the year before. I said, well, you know, last year the guys said they wanted to get rid of the guys' cell phones. No way. So in one short year.
Wow. Not again.
They said, Coach, you can't. We can't function without that. So that from 09 to 2010. And so can you imagine how it is in 2024?
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, but just think now, in fairness, when I misplace my cell phone, I get nervous. Because I got all my numbers, and what if my wife called, and what if my kids called, and my grandkids called. So I get it, but it's made listening harder.
Communication is not nearly what it used to be.
This is the American Idea. This is the Ashbrook Center. We always ask our guests the same final question. Your favorite leader in American history or in world history? Who do you admire?
The last time I heard that asked, it was just American history.
I like this.
It's been changed. He's a good learner.
Yeah.
He's a good listener.
Great
listener.
Great question. Yes.
Winston Churchill.
All right. Why Winston Churchill?
Because of the quote during World War II when things were tough and he stood in front of all of Europe, all the world, and said he'd fight to the end and never, never, never surrender. And as a historian, a history teacher, a history major in college, you know, that was moving to me, that someone would have the courage to do that and basically, you know, save democracy in the world and defeat the Germans in Europe. And so we've adopted that in football, you know. Football is probably about as close to war and the military battle as you can get to. There's a lot of analogies, but it's something we say before we leave the locker room. It's printed in our locker room above our board is never, never, never surrender. And that lesson in life, that you don't quit, you don't give up, you don't get in, you give back up, is a lesson I think a lot of our players have taken with them, not only on the football field, but in life.
That's a great one.
We were just in Churchill's war room for a leadership conference, and they had his wooden chair that he sat at, and there was a half-smoked cigar still there, okay? And we got to go in there, and on the left arm of the chair, there was a little groove grooved into the arm. And we asked the guy, I said, what is that? They said, that was his wedding ring. The stress was so great when he was in meetings that wedding ring created a wedge, a cutout of the wood.
Wow.
I mean, you know, just think about, we say, oh, he made tough decisions. No, he made decisions that his body was, you know, mine was Abraham Lincoln. And I think the long and the short of it is having the courage to make the right decision and do the right thing, even if it costs you your life. I mean, our Savior did that in spades, but none of us are quite, you know, that level.
But Lincoln was a human being.
But Lincoln was a human that was willing to make the right decision on behalf of the whole team, the whole civilization, the whole country, knowing that it was not going to be universally accepted. In fact, it would probably cost him his life.
I may have to go back and say courage is number one characteristic.
Yeah, right.
Moral courage. I mean, you think about that, because I know there was a greater leader ever than Lincoln. That's true.
Right. I mean,
and the courage it took.
But that is kind of selfless.
It is. That is.
So
selfless.
Go back to myself.
You're exactly right. And he's pretty competent.
You know, no question.
Turned out to be.
What, and he, you know, that, who was it? The uncle gave him the law books, and he read them all and all that.
And he overcome defeat many times.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's the hard part about the question. You say, well, who was your best player ever? I said, oh, you know, so-and-so was good. Well, what about so-and-so? And, you know, so-and-so was pretty good, right? Yeah, yeah. So you can never...
Well, we're
you
blessed as a country to have a lot of great leaders.
For sure, right?
For sure, right?
Yeah. And two with me today. Okay. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me on The American Idea.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The American Idea. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to subscribe at Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and leave a 5-star review. If you want to learn more or get involved in Ashbrook's vital work, visit our website, ashbrook.org.